No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. No guests tonight, so I hope you will call in and join in the conversation. Again, the number is 888-628-6008, or you can Skype your questions in to BBS Radio 1. Before I get started, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen, who is always complaining that she doesn't get enough time to talk. So tonight we're going to let her talk and talk and talk. Are you ready, Kathleen?
Yes, I'm always ready. I have a lot to say. You know how that goes.
I know you have a lot to say.
Yes, but I'm excited. Let me mention it now, and I'll also mention at the end of the show that next Sunday we're having Lainey Hyamson, who is one of the biggest advocates for kids in the education system, especially incredibly knowledgeable about the Common Core and what's happening. And in New York, they're actually getting legislation together to protect students from having their records released to the marketing companies. So it's going to be interesting show next week, and I hope everyone will join in and listen to Lainey. She's incredible. She's an expert at, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Great. We're looking forward to that. And, you know, just so you just because you mentioned it, I don't want to digress here, but we had some crazy legislation introduced this week by Anita Bonds, who's a councilwoman here in Washington. She wants to put on your permanent college record any incidents that's been investigated by the school of sexual assault, including if you've withdrawn from the college while you're under investigation. Several people have said it's a good idea, but it's a bad implementation of a good idea. Like, her heart's in the right place, but you really can't do this. You really, it would violate people's civil rights, and schools are not held to the same standard that our legal system is. So
wait a minute. I don't understand. Okay, so let's say a boy. I'm a junior in high school, and I have an accusation out against me that, you know, I did something inappropriate in the swimming pool. So what happens now that I go and they have a little investigation? So if you're investigated in a sexual assault of some kind, and whether you are guilty or not, that's going to be reported?
Well, first of all, I'm going to ignore the fact that you're sexist and you had to change to be a boy. Okay.
Well, I have two sons.
I'm just saying. No, it would only affect college students. It doesn't affect anybody in high school or middle school. Only college students. But yes, if you were a college student and you were investigated, the way I read the legislation, that could go on your record. And if you withdraw while you're being investigated, if you say, look, I'm going to leave the college, that would go on your record, definitely go on your record. And if you're convicted of any kind of inappropriate sexual act, that would go on your record. And it would stay there forever.
But what if you were innocent?
Well, if you were If you're found innocent, no, it wouldn't go on your record. But part of the problem, and this was outlined in a letter by a lawyer to the Washington Post today. First of all, the Post did an editorial yesterday saying it's a bad idea, but her heart's in the right place, but bad implementation. And a lawyer today wrote, look, they don't have the same standards in college. You know, you have certain rights under the law when you're accused in a court of law. But in college, it's quite a different thing, you know, and it depends, particularly depends on what college you're talking about. Some colleges have stricter rules than others. You don't have the same right to a defense counsel, you don't, you know, in several cases. So you really can't take anything that's been done by the college and make it, in this lawyer's opinion, and I agree, part of their permanent record.
I don't understand why they would do this, given that there was that whole craziness that happened. Was it University of North Carolina or South Carolina, where, you know, Rolling Stones had this big article about rape on college campuses and how colleges cover it up. And then later we find out that it was all fabrication. None of it happened. And yet these boys, some of them were, you know, kicked out. Now, you know, I remember being at parties like that, and you know, the old saying is, well, you know what you're going into. You don't, you know, there's a lot of things that happen in those parties, and it just goes both ways. And I think that that's such a crazy thing to implement or to think about, especially after there's been so many cases lately of how it was, you know, they weren't correct. It wasn't, they were lies. So,
well, that's,
I think,
true.
It would be even very, very, you would think before you introduce legislation, and I think this is the thing that impacts Congress a lot. You know, people go and introduce things because they want to put a Band-Aid on everything. So it makes them look good, and it makes it look like you're doing something. You really have to think everything through. You have to think step by step. You know, how are you going to implement it? How are you going to fund it? You know, who's going to have the oversight? They don't think these things through. And sure, it might be all well intended, but isn't a legislator supposed to know how to legislate? And it just seems to me this is a problem we have in politics, whether it's city council or the, you know, Congress.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, the Rolling Stone thing is just one example. There was another famous example at Duke University where everybody, including me, had really condemned the Duke lacrosse team for a party in which they supposedly raped women and did all sorts of things. That in the end, they were all found innocent of that. So, yeah,
well,
that's very true.
The young woman was a prostitute, too. I mean, you know.
Yes, she was a prostitute. And let me tell you, once again, I'm shocked to find out that you went to parties like this, because I had always thought that you were reading to the blind when you were in college, or
that was high school,
I was actually a
youth counselor for the what we used to call the Youth Association for Mentally Retarded Children, which I guess probably no longer exists with that name. But
yeah.
I did read, and I went to camp. I was a camp counselor, well, not Bible, but I, you know, was with the mentally, what is it? I don't even know what to say anymore. I don't know how to be politically correct. That's how old I am. I don't know how to do it anymore.
I know. That's why I'm on the show, to help you be politically correct. And in that vein, let me start by saying we have a new co-sponsor of the new Columbia Admission Act in the House this week. And it just happens to be an old friend of mine, a guy named Mike Honda, who is a congressman from the 17th District of California in the Sacramento area. He and I worked together with Kaylin Free, who was the director of Indians List, where we trained Native Americans that wanted to run for public office. And Representative Honda has been involved in that cause for a long time. Unfortunately, we're not doing that anymore, but he and I have talked many times, and we're just so happy to have him as a co-sponsor. So thank you, Representative Honda. We now have 121 co-sponsors in the House. And again, Kathleen, for the grand prize, can you tell me what all 121 members of Congress who have sponsored this bill have in common?
They're all men.
They're all, no, some of them are not men, but that's close. They're all Democrats, every one of them. So we're out there, you know, with the lantern, looking for the one honest Republican that'll stand up to the table and support democracy in our nation's capital. But in the meantime, thank you, Representative Honda. We appreciate your support. So how about your old friend Donald Trump?
Well, listen, you guys were really on, like, you were on the, what do they call it when, you know, you're like a little bit going before the press, you're hot, you're getting, you know, you were doing, you jumped on an issue and you got it going. And when you guys did that dump the Trump whole thing last week, boy, you guys kind of set a movement going on. That's all I've been seeing. And it's interesting, right? Because, you know, you got all that press in D.C. and then he goes to Phoenix right after that and had a huge crowd of people in Phoenix that were just, you know, kind of found what he was saying to kind of ring true in their ears. I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about it. I mean, there's a lot of people that I'm surprised that are thinking, you know what, at least Trump is saying the things that need to be heard. Right now, people running for president won't say anything to offend anybody. Therefore, they won't talk about the issues. And these, some of the things that he said, like, look, I can say this because I grew up on the Mexican border. I'm half Mexican. And I've seen a total change in the past 20 years of the type of people that came across. Now, I'm not saying everyone's a criminal. Far from it. A lot of hardworking people that just are looking for something, you know, a way to feed their kids, and they're hard workers and they come over here. But there is, and as I told you, after being in working for a hospital on the border, seeing it pretty much go down in flames because of the influx of people we have to take care of that are from Mexico. It's, you know, it's one thing to come and visit the border for an hour and say you understand the issue. It's a whole other thing when you look at a school system of, say, 1,700 high school kids, and I would say a good 1,300 of them are from Mexico. They don't pay taxes. They're supposed to pay $3,000 to $4,000 a year towards the school system. They don't. Therefore, the taxes just went up this year. I think on an $80,000 home, it went up by about $30, $40 a month. On a house, $150,000, and went up by about $800 a year. That's a lot for a town that has no, you know, is basically in economic distress. And, you know, I would stand in line and see food stamps and people buying food with food stamps to sell in the restaurant in Mexico and being happy. I mean, very content that they're taking and they know and they don't have any problem. I mean, before you would be embarrassed to say you were taking advantage of a system. But nowadays it's a different animal. And now they're like, hey, I live in Mexico. I live in Agua Prieta. It's 300,000 people. And they don't pay taxes, and their jobs are in Douglas. I mean, it's really a screwed-up system, and I'm not saying because I have lots of family, I have lots of friends, I know a lot of dream kids. There is something that needs to be discussed, and we need to start discussing the things that everyone will say, oh, you're prejudiced. No, it's what's happening. Everyone's got to take a look and come to the table and be able to discuss what's wrong. Because like last week, 1980, something happened. They weren't taking care of business, and this is what we've had now. We have a mess that we have to deal with. So, that was a lot to be said.
You know, I think that you hit the nail on the head that you know, we have this is a two-pronged problem with this guy. First of all, you're right. People are afraid to talk, and we have to take some responsibility for that. We have to encourage people to be honest. We stand out there and we say, you know, that these politicians aren't honest with us and they don't speak the truth, but then the moment they say anything, somebody jumps on top of them. I think politicians have to be braver, and they need to stand out there and speak their mind more. And people need to give them the environment in which they can do that. And then the other thing is that, you know, Trump is just a train wreck, and yes, he plays on the emotions, you know, the basest emotions of people. And there are important issues that need to be talked about. We can't just say we don't need border security because people like Trump are out there being racist. No, we need to talk about these things. But we're not going to have a conversation as long as we have a buffoon like this in charge of the dialogue. You know, to come to Arizona, look, as a politician, I can tell you, to come to Arizona and trash John McCain's military record just shows what a lack of understanding this man has. I'm a liberal Democrat. I agree with very little of what Senator McCain has to say, but I would be the first to stand up and say he's an American hero. He was, you know, they tried to make a public, you know, a disgrace of him. They tried to use him as a PR tool, the communists. He never allowed that to happen. He was strong and he was steadfast, and he's everything that we would want a soldier to be. And he has a distinguished military record. And in my mind, and I think in the mind of most Americans, he is an American hero. So to come and say this stuff about him, not only shows a lack of understanding, but it shows a lack of respect for everybody that wears the uniform. And this man should be ashamed. And Republicans are now calling for him to withdraw. And I think they're right.
You know, I think what it is with Donald Trump, he doesn't need money. So he doesn't have to worry about what region he is and what he says when he's in what state. He doesn't have to care about that. And then this is what is you know, not surprisingly, but unfortunate, is that he does go off and do something like this. And that's what everyone was saying. You know, he said something and he said it wrong, but he said it at least and got it out there. But just wait, he's going to do something and totally mess himself up. And he did. I mean, you know, when you listen to it, you kind of understand where he's coming from, but it's totally, totally politically incorrect, which makes me wonder, when we talk about freedom and freedom of speech, that we don't allow politicians to state their mind. Because even though we're saying, okay, we have to be open, when he says something like that, you know, you want to call him stupid and an idiot and all that stuff. But when you listen to what he was saying, I hate to say it, not that McCain is not a hero, but in the way he said things, I could see how it can be misconstrued and kind of what he meant. Although this guy can definitely has a hard time communicating what he's trying to say. And it usually most 99.9% goes just totally wrong for him. I mean, he really should spend some money on his communication skills. I think he might be farther than.
Well, you know, this is where we're going to have to agree to disagree, because I don't think it's just a matter of not understanding or being, you know, or speaking inappropriately. I think this is the kind of guy that likes to go into a movie theater and scream fire. I think that's what he's about. You know, I think he's about trying to find the most controversial thing that he could say. And in doing that, sometimes he doesn't understand when he steps over the line, you know. Yeah. And he certainly stepped over the line by taking an American hero and you know, I don't know how you can say a guy that ended up in a prison camp, severely wounded, almost died, and stood up for his country until the very last day, is not a hero. I mean,
you know what he said,
when you look up hero in the dictionary, there ought to be a damn picture of John McCain.
You know, but there was at one point, you know, when you are a soldier, if you get caught, you know, that's the worst thing you can do. I mean, that's what he was kind of trying to phrase it, that really being you're a hero because you got caught. You know, I mean, he was making all that. And that's the way you used to think, maybe way in World War One or World War Two. But it definitely is a point where you can't really say that in these modern times. But, he's crazy. And, you know,
That just proves my point. He doesn't understand the history. He doesn't know that McCain was a hero before he was shot down. McCain was on a aircraft carrier where his plane exploded, and he got out of the plane and walked away from it. He didn't run away from it. He didn't hide. He got out of the plane, walked away, and I think he tried to help put out the fire, if I'm right. So this is a man with a long, distinguished military career. One just about him being nobody and was shot down, and his daddy, you know, his father was in charge of all military operations in Vietnam for the Navy. They tried to make an example of this man when they found out who he was.
I think all you have to say is that Donald Trump deferred from going to Vietnam for five times. He got deferment. So, you know, when I was working for Petra, we called them the Warhawks. They were all guys who were really big on war but had never gone and got deferments, like Dan Coats and Gingrich, and, you know, I think
John Wayne used to do paid for a movie called The Green Berets, and he never served. Yeah, and those of us, you know, that's another thing I feel. My brother served in combat. My father served in combat. Lots of my family served in combat. But I never wore the uniform. And I think that those of us who haven't served have a special obligation to respect these men who went out there, men and women who went out there and did for all of us. You know, they not only stood up for themselves and their country, they stood up for me. So
that's right.
Thank you, Senator McCain. I wish you were a co-sponsor of the new Columbia Admission Act, but nonetheless, I respect you for your service to America, and I think you're a hero.
Well, the other thing, too, that was being mentioned was that between Bernie Sanders, who everyone has, you know, in the beginning kind of poo-pooed and called him a socialist and, you know, and he has no chance, he's really getting a lot of attention by, I think, a lot of Democrats, because what I hear are Democrats saying, I'm tired of having to vote for the least of the two evils, and I'm tired of voting just to vote Democrat. I want to believe in somebody, and they're finding that belief in Bernie Sanders. You know, now that's really difficult for the Republicans and the right wing because they see him as a socialist. But I think he's saying that. I think he's representing Middle America and saying the things that need to be said. Where, you know, I think at least 70-80% of the population of the United States are going through. At least, you know, I mean, these guys just don't have much clue now when they get to Congress. I mean, there's very few rags to riches stories there. So they, I don't think, realize how difficult it is to even have a small house in a small suburb in Kansas City. I mean, you know, food is as expensive as anywhere else. And so, you know, I think that Bernie Sanders has a lot to say, and it's going to be interesting to see if he can sustain it, because, you know, everyone's just so sure Hillary is going to make it, right?
Well, therein again, I want to come back to Trump for a second. Here's this guy standing out there saying, I'm worth $10 billion. I'm worth $10 billion. You know what? Why do I want a guy like that running the country? Because he can feel my pain? Because he knows what it's like, you know, the things that you're talking about, that there's an $800 increase a year in taxes for somebody that owns a $150,000 house. And I agree with you, that's a big deal. But how does a guy with $10 billion understand that problem? Can he even understand that problem? You know, this is a guy that pays more. He flew into a winery that he owns in Virginia in his private helicopter the other day. You know, this guy pays more for keeping his helicopter idling for an hour than you pay in property taxes in a year. So I don't know why he's out there saying, I'm worth $10 billion, I'm worth $10 billion. We should all be impressed by that. And let's point out, for those of you that might not be listening, and not be aware of the fact that when he was born, he was worth millions of dollars. His father ran a real estate development company in New York, which Donald Trump took over. And let me tell you something, it's way easier to turn $500 million into $10 billion than it is to start from scratch. So if the point is that he's trying to show us what a great businessman he is. Hey, give me $500 million and I'll see what I can do with it. You know, I did pretty much the same thing. I turned the fortune my father left me. I increased it significantly. The only problem is my father only left me $50.
I did better than you. I just was on my own from when I can remember. When I went out that door, I think I had a credit card debt. But the thing, too, that we forget about Donald Trump that I remember when the crash of 1987, living in New York City, and Donald Trump was like, he was broke. He was going to declare bankruptcy, and the city forgave him millions.
He stiffed all sorts of little people.
Exactly. And nobody
city,
ever.
All sorts of stuff. Right.
And nobody ever talks about that. I mean, how do you want somebody to be president if he was going for bankruptcy and then the government stepped in and saved him? I mean, they're not stepping in to save me right now. I wonder why.
Yeah. Well, and like I'd like to point out before we digress, because we're letting you speak a lot tonight and you're throwing some stuff out there, but I've been emotionally supporting you for years. My emotional support.
I need some solid help.
It's keeping you going. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's just crazy. They forgave millions and millions of dollars worth of debt. But, you know, if you didn't pay the $56 tax on your car that year, they would have come and taken it from you.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. So... given that he's doing well in the polls, and I mean, we can't overestimate this because he's really only pulling 18%, but there are so many Republican candidates that 18% puts him at the very top of things. What do you think of the governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker? What do you think of him getting into the race?
I don't know. A lot of, people who are, for, I guess, a pure capitalist system that has no kind of, watch over the employees. I mean, he's broken unions. He's supposedly got the state back in the balanced budget, but at quite a cost to the workers. So, I believe in small business. I believe in the capitalist system, but I've always found that large organizations always take advantage and greed steps in. So I've always thought there has to be some kind of safety, for the laborers and the employees of big American corporations. So I have a problem with Scott Walker, but he's got a big fan base. He really did break the unions that were very well organized, and the teachers and the communication workers. So I'm a little nervous of him, but I'm sure that people who feel that there's too much government involvement and too many, that there's just too many safeguards protecting employees that it keeps them from making the profit are going to support him.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And I don't like him, and I don't like what he did to the unions in Wisconsin, but they were breaking the back. Breaking the back of the economic system. And there needs to be some accommodations made, and we need to sit down in some cases, I think, at the table. I think he was heavy-handed about it, you're right. It appeals to people.
When you look at a small town like Douglas or Bisbee that has a police force and a workforce, and during, I guess, the 90s and early, 2000s, they got good pensions, because nobody wanted those jobs. They got a lot of benefits. And then the hardest thing for me is to see where they work for 20 years. They retire at maybe 40, 45, get their full pension, and then go and get another full-time job. Yeah. So, you're seeing small towns just only being able to raise monies just to pay for the pensions and not be able to pay for real firemen and real policemen and the sanitation. So,
that's a problem. Like, and we see them on disability, too. I mean, sometimes they don't even make it 20 years. They make it 10 years and they have the same kind of motorcycle accidents that I've had a dozen times and walked away from, knock on wood. But they get a pension based on disability because they broke a bone it's tough sometimes to watch it. And I think it is a real issue. But what about our friend Elizabeth Warren? Can we get her in the mix? I mean, who's coming in on the Democratic side? Every week we see new Republicans, but we don't see Democrats.
Well, that just shows what kind of a stronghold she has in the Democratic Party. I mean, Hillary Clinton and her people have, you know, really been in the trenches since when I was in New York in 1992 when Clinton came in and, you know, I was working on the convention. You know, ever since then, they've laid a heavy footprint and they've had their people in there. And, yeah. You know, it's a small, even though it's a big Democratic party, it's a small circle of the insiders. And I think Hillary's got it pretty much sewed up, and Bernie Sanders being more of an independent, although now he's, you know, registered as a Democrat, I think he appeals to a lot of people. I mean, even a lot of my liberal friends are not comfortable with Hillary Clinton for the amount of money that they've made, the billions that have been, you know, made through association with other countries. There's just a huge conflict of interest, and she's not the most honest person that I think is in politics, and a lot of her people aren't. So, you know, I'm going to, if anyone's listening, there I am on record. I don't know. You are who you associate with, you know, and I don't know. Bernie Sanders appeals to me, even Jeb Bush over Hillary Clinton. Can you believe that?
Well, people out there that are listening to this, Kathleen hit it on the head. You are who you associate with. So please call in, because I don't want to be known for the people that I've been associated with.
You're already slanted.
I just want to go on record. But no, I think she does have it locked up, and I have a problem. I think that she had her best chance, and this has nothing to say about her, just the strategy of it. I think she had the best chance when she ran against Obama in the primary, and she didn't make it because David Axelrod, who was her campaign manager, tapped into this feeling that you're talking about right here. He said, people are voting for this woman because they don't have an alternative. If I can provide them with a reasonable alternative, I can win this. And that's what he did. He put up a reasonable alternative. So right. I think she's got a hard way to go still, but I don't see who's out there that's going to challenge her at this point. And I think that getting somebody like Elizabeth Warren, I think, who has a few image problems. I mean, there's some things I'd work on with her, but I think getting somebody like into this race would be a healthy
thing. Think about it. When you think about the Democratic Party, who do you think? I mean, who can you tell me are other leaders?
I don't know. You know,
exactly.
I look at people like Mark Warner, who's a great politician, and say he's too, I don't know, inexperienced and unknown. This is this problem that O'Malley, who's the governor of Maryland, former governor of Maryland, is going to have. I don't know. I don't know who's out there. I'm looking for a leader, and that's, you know, I think all this acrimony on Capitol Hill, where we've been so divisive, I think that's been a problem. I haven't seen a whole lot of leaders step forward. You know, there's people I like on the Democratic side. I like Cory Booker.
I do like him a lot.
There are people I like, but are they ready to be president of the United States? I don't know. I don't know who's out there. Maybe it should be Kathleen Gomez for president.
Oh, hell no. I wouldn't want that job. I might like to be like a White House event planner. Maybe that would be the job for me.
All right, then I'll run.
Okay, there you go. I was wondering when you were going to say, hey, I just want to make a little announcement, too, that the D.C. City Council is on vacation until September 22nd.
Not Jeez. A bad job, huh?
Yeah, well, how much do they get paid? $20,000?
No, $130,000 a year. Uh-huh. And they're off. Let's see, they ended. They didn't even make it till the end of last week. It was like the 14th or 15th was their last day, and they're off till September 22nd. So they're off for 2 months.
Jeez.
You know, these guys are not school teachers. They're legislators, you know, but.
And you mean to tell me there's not enough for them to work on? that really they've done everything they need to do for the city.
Oh, no, there's no problems in Washington, D.C. whatsoever. We just in the paper today, we've had three people murdered since Friday. We have a streetcar system that paid $100 and some million for, and that's not even working yet.
It's still not working.
And they announced today that some of the problems, one of the problems they put in, which is my favorite, there's a list of problems. Nobody's in charge of it. There's all sorts of structural problems with the cars and stuff. But there's also a problem that they didn't put in heaters on the rails. So if it gets real cold, they can't move the cars.
Where do they go?
To the tracks.
The people who do this, you know, Tucson, and they spend a lot of money on this little same thing to get the college students to downtown so they can spend their money. You know, they took them a couple years, but my gosh, it's up and running and boom, boom, boom. And if you can do it in freaking Tucson, where nothing like that ever existed, I don't understand why D.C. I mean, that's nuts. This
and
is this a problem.
This is a 2.5 mile system. It goes 2.5 miles. Yeah. It's not, you know, at one time, streetcars went all over the city. Actually, just before I arrived in Washington, D.C., they got rid of the streetcars. But friends that I have that are my age remember them from their childhood. And I certainly remember them when I was 16 years old and started driving a motorcycle. There were tracks all over the city, you know, and that's always a problem on a motorcycle or a bicycle going over tracks because they're slippery and you have to watch out for them.
Right.
But I remember them all down Wisconsin Avenue, all down M Street, all that, you know. And this thing is 2.5 miles and they can't get it running. Well, we're going to take a short break here and dedicate a song to our friend Donald Trump. This is for you, Mr. Trump. Listen carefully because I think there's some good advice in it for you. Here's one from Ray Stevens, an oldie but a goodie, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Itemize the things you covet as you squander through your life. Bigger cars, bigger houses, term insurance for your wife. Tuesday evenings with your harlot, and on Wednesdays it's your charlatan analyst. He's high up on your list. You've got air-conditioned sinuses and dark, disturbing doubt about...
And we're back. Hope you got something out of that music there, Mr. Trump. You need to focus a little bit on who you are rather than what you are. And that's the next question I have for my always most distinguished guest, Kathleen. What do you see? I mean, when you're out there, Kathleen, you spent time in Arizona. You grew up in Arizona. You know the politics of Arizona. You've been involved in the politics of Arizona. And now you're out there in the Midwest. And
right.
You certainly spent enough time here in D.C. and New York. What do you think? What do you detect as the big differences? Or are they? Are people just pretty much the same all across the board?
No, I think it's still pretty regional. Like in Arizona, the big issues are the whole thing on immigration and how it impacts the system. And unfortunately, in Arizona, we've got now the Republicans have been in control for a long time, but these are Republicans that didn't grow up in Arizona. They migrated from, like, Powell and his daughters there and, you know, Karl Rove. I mean, it's a big kind of meeting point for the real conservatives. And I think that they've put, you know, with no taxes and all that type of thing and reducing the budget for education, they've made the state the 50th in many things, and there's just like people are suffocating. So immigration and education and no jobs in Arizona. When you come to the Midwest, and Kansas City is definitely the Bible Belt. You know, this is where the big churches are, and nothing's open until after 1 on Sunday, and, you know, and people are very, very humble, very religious, very, very kind, and, you know, I want to say probably, you know, seem to be incredibly friendly, that it's all about values. It's all about being able to pray where they want to pray, to have the freedom to do that. I mean, it was funny. I was telling a friend of mine on July 4th, we went to, I'm staying with a good friend of mine who moved out here from Connecticut. You know, we met in New York City, a good friend of mine, and his friend lives in Prairie Village in Kansas City. And we go to the 4th of July parade there, and it's really, the fire engine comes, and all the kids decorate their bikes, and the whole neighborhood comes, and they walk behind the fire engine for a block and come back around. Let me tell you, I have never in my life, I think, seriously been in a completely white environment. Where there was no Hispanics or blacks or shades of Hispanic or Asians or, you know, it was just all blonde white people. And the one thing that was interesting to me was it was very about home. It was very about being patriotic and about their religion. And I mean, things started on time, which was really rare for me. You know, back east in D.C., nothing starts on time. Definitely in the Mexican community that I grew up in, nothing starts on time. And let me tell you, they all showed up. The parade started at 10. It started at 10. Everybody was orderly. Everybody was very, you know, warm and polite. And they went around. It was supposed to end at 12. And at 12, everything was packed up and it was clean and it was gone. Now, in mine growing up, we would have been partying till the next day. You know, people would come and go, but it was very, very organized. And I see that people here, if the one thing I would say is negative, they don't really think about what's going on in California or in Arizona. It's very relevant to what they're living in. Now, let me tell you, the Mexican community here in Kansas City is huge. I would say that it's shocking to me because they're all northern, from the northern part, I think, a lot from Sonora, because the cooking is just like my grandmother, from chorizo to everything. I've just been shocked. And they're doing very well here. They're climbing up. You know, the community accepts them. They don't have any kind of real race issues. They're hard workers. You know, there's a Mexican restaurant that I swear, if I close my eyes, I could be in Douglas. The food is just the same. It was packed today, and it was the only thing really opened up. They have a whole community and area and neighborhood, and then now they're moving up. They're moving into another neighborhood that's a little bit better and not so many old homes. So it's very, very different than Arizona. And then, of course, when you're on the East Coast and New York, that's still so very different than Kansas and Arizona. So I still think it's people in mid-America, they want to be able to have their religion, pray, and they are very patriotic, and they want to be able to have their morals embraced by the government. They, you know, in that it's traditional here. It's ordered and organized. There's not a lot of chaos. If everyone kind of does what they're supposed to, but it's the old traditional family style. So, you know, it kind of was interesting because I really haven't been in a place where, you know, going to church is what you do on Sunday. Everyone here goes to church on Sunday, you know, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And that is very unique. And it kind of was sad to me. I mean, I don't go to church every Sunday, and yet, you know, there was some kind of warmth to that. The people are still kind of in the traditional, following the traditional values of what we grew up in. I mean, it was kind of a warm feeling came across. Not that it was just in a complete white community, but that those kind of traditions were still existing in mid-America.
Well, you know, first of all, I hope the Pope's not listening because he'll be shocked.
I know that I'm not going to church.
But yeah, I mean... It's funny. We went to a wedding a couple of weeks ago. We did a pre-recorded show because previous show because we were both tied up and I was tied up by going to a wedding in Asheville, North Carolina, where you could say exactly the same thing. There were no people of color. Didn't see anybody that looked Latino to me absolutely no African Americans in this little town of Hendersonville, North Carolina, which is really kind of middle America. And again, a lot of flags flying, but it was right after that horrible, horrible shooting in Charleston, South Carolina, which was a 2 or 3 hour drive from where we were. It was very, very close to where we were. And there were plenty of young white guys going around with Confederate battle flags. And, you know, this incensed my daughter and also one of her cousins. Trisha lives in just graduated from college and lives in Chicago. Her cousin went to school in Philadelphia, and the both of them were just shocked. They couldn't believe that people were doing this. And Trisha even, you know, said to some of the guys, why don't you come try to, you know, ride around with your pickup truck with the two Confederate flags through Chicago and see how far you get, because you won't get very far. And so, I mean, there is some, I guess, cohesion through the homogeneousness of the, if that's a word, homogeny of the citizens. But then, like you say, they're not sensitive to what's going on in the rest of the world. They're right. Isolated. And these kids certainly were. I mean, I think that a lot of these kids see this as a sense of Southern pride instead of, you know, seeing the other side of the coin, which is, you know, this is a terribly racist thing. You know, they act like Robert E. Lee rode into South Carolina and put the flag on top of the Capitol. He did not. It actually had only been there for 50-some years, and it was in response to the civil rights movement. There were legislators in South Carolina that thought, you know, desegregation was a bad thing. So they ran that flag up, and it's racist. And I think I got the distinct impression some of these kids just don't understand that. They don't understand the racist nature of this flag. And so
I would say that in Kansas, I'm finding one thing very interesting, and that they're very accepting of the Mexican community from what I've seen. Now, they do have white only country, you know, golf, country clubs and stuff that I think still exist. And this is a very well to do area. I mean, really, Kansas City, Kansas and Missouri, I'm really shocked. I'm admiring it more and more. It's really a really livable city. Got a great downtown, a lot of things going on. And it's pretty open, but, you know, every region is different. And once you get out of Kansas City, you know, I do know that there's a Confederate flag in Missouri and stuff like that. But I guess it's interesting to see how what is left of what you would call the traditional American values does still exist, because, you know, and in many ways that's been changed by all kinds of colors and all kinds of shades and all kinds of, you know, the new politically correctness, where really everyone's supposed to be the same and think the same and be all accepting, and which is going to be a problem. Human nature just doesn't work that way. But it's I can see how it'd be very difficult for candidates, and maybe that's why there's so much disconnect, because you really have to kind of maybe walk a couple of days, and whether you're in the Midland, the Mid-Heart country, or whether you're in northern United States or the Southwest or back east, because there are many problems that are the same, and yet there are still many things that are different. But I think it's jobs. I think it's, you know, there's no movement. The middle class is disappearing even here. I mean, there's still, you know, a lot of nice neighborhoods. And basically, Kansas looks very clean to me. You know, it doesn't have the rundownness. There's a few very poor areas where it is mostly it is Hispanic and it is African American, but there doesn't seem to be tension in this city that I know of yet.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that brings up a very interesting point. Isn't this one of the problems that we're having? And maybe it's been exacerbated by the fact that we have all this instant media now, where we find out, you know, everything that's going on almost instantly, that our politicians are trying to please everybody. And right. They are, you know, they want to say things that don't offend anybody. And you're right, there are these regional differences. So how can you address all of these and actually do anything concrete? You know, don't we need some brave people that yes. stand up, like, you know, let's say Dr. King did, and said, you know, I don't care what the what the general consensus of opinion is, this is wrong. Rosa Parks types that stand up and say, no, I know that I'm, you know, pounding against the brick wall here, but this is wrong. I mean, we do have to, I think, come together around some core values. Certainly,
and you know what's interesting?
And middle class, too. Yeah, what?
And what's interesting is that, you know, we're caught up in all these terrible things, like the Marines being killed at the, you know, recruiting station, which is terrible. I mean, I'd gone with Diego when he was thinking of going into the military, and now they're all going to be armed. You know, that was something I think several dozen states have now made it so that, you know, these guys are going to be armed, which they should at this point now. But, you know, we're distracted with all the racial tension, with all these terrible things that are happening, that the middle class has got to get together and get over the racial tensions, to join together, to be able to make most of us be able to still succeed. And that's going to be a real key challenge, because whether, you know, and that may be whoever you get back. Maybe middle America is not about being and supporting a party, but supporting the person who's going to be able to articulate the issues and come up with solutions. Because this two-party thing, you know, I am totally against it. I'm just burned out. You know, the Democrats are as bad as the Republicans and vice versa. And I think, you know, there has to be a different approach. And all this stuff is just keeping us separated, you know, the South from the North, and you know, the whites from the blacks, and the Hispanics from, you know, the where they come in Mexico. I mean, look at what happened to El Chapo. That's another thing I have to bring up. I realize we're getting close to losing time, being out of time. El Chapo built the first tunnel, I can't believe I'm bragging about this, in Douglas, which was like James Bond about 25 years ago. And I thought he was in the United States. I didn't realize he was in Mexico. It was just a matter of time before he was going to escape through another tunnel.
Well, you know, maybe he is in the United States. They don't know where the hell he is.
I digress.
It was amazing. Well, no, it was an amazing thing. And if you've seen the thing on the internet, I think we've all seen it now, where he's in the shower and he walks in and you actually see him go down the tunnel. You're like, you know, there's no way. You know, this wasn't the Shawshank Redemption. The guy didn't dig a hole in the wall. You know what I mean?
Right.
There lots of people were involved in this. And you worry how many people in the government were involved in it. They've already removed the head of the prison. I mean, it's obvious that you can't build a million-dollar tunnel under the prison without somebody in the prison knowing about it.
He had hired architects and stuff to build all over the place. But I guess back to my point is, I think middle America has got to somehow band together, because if you're African American or if you're Hispanic, you're a small Hispanic business, and, you know, you have a small business African American or Asian or whatever, I mean, the issues are impacting us all. So
Right. We all have to take responsibility. You know, well, I see here, for example, we used to have a local hardware store, Heckinger's, which doesn't exist anymore, because we all went to Home Depot because we wanted to save $2 on a light fixture or $9 on this or $8 on that, you know. And so Walmart is taking over America, but we all are part of it. You know, we all go and we shop there.
Right.
So there are some values I think we have to come together and stand up for and say, you know what, these car manufacturers that for years beat us over the head to drive American cars. And let me say, my wife and I both drive Chrysler, so we drive American cars. But they were the ones that farmed all the jobs out to China and other places because they wanted to save a couple of bucks. And
yes,
building cars. So, you know, we've got to be honest with each other. We've got to stand up together. I agree with that 100%. And say to these, to our politicians and our businesses and our leaders that we don't want to see the middle class disappear. You know, that's another thing. I think you and I and the people of our generation ignored the middle class because it was given to us.
Yes.
You know, our parents had to struggle and fight to get there. And my parents, probably much like your parents, always pushed for education and other things. You know, they were about hard work. They were about education. They were about, you know, making a better world. And I think we just took it for granted that it would always be there.
That's
right. And we're
right.
seeing it disappear, and it's sad. So you get the last word, because today's Kathleen Day.
That's right. Okay, well, I'm here in Kansas and enjoying it, and I'm glad I'm not going to be in D.C. where you're going to get all that heat that we just had. But I do miss Arizona. I hope to get there soon. But thanks, everybody, for listening, and come listen to us. Next Sunday, we're going to have an expert on education, and it's really going to be interesting. They're trying to keep student information free of the marketers, so it should be very, very interesting. Hope you'll join us.
Goodbye, America. See you next week.
Representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.